Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
Magic Johnson gave a detailed story about how dominant Michael Jordan could be on little to no sleep. Magic said, quote, "This guy would play cards from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. and he would get 2 hours of sleep and have an 8 a.m. tee time, go play golf, take a 2-hour nap, and score 30 by halftime. This dude was just incredible. He is the GOAT." So, Shannon, do you like Magic's description of Michael Jordan?
Skip, some guys just have that ability. Some guys just, Skip, I don't know what it was. They had to go out every single night. They had to drink, come in a hangover. Skip, when I first got in the league, guys would go to their car and smoke to a break for a lunch break. Thankfully, that waned. But some guys just had that ability, Skip, to be able to do that. I was not one of those guys. I needed to be in my playbook. I needed to be in my room. I needed to get my rest. But some guys, Skip, I don't know how. I mean, there have been times, Skip, you got to get in the shower because you cannot go into this meeting room smelling like that because Mike going to lose his mind and then he going to be looking at me crazy talking about how did I let this happen? And you a grown man. So, Skip, some guys just have that ability to be able to party, to drink, to do whatever and still go out to perform at a high level. Now, to the degree that Michael Jordan, he might be the only guy that could ever do it to that level, to play cards from 11 to 5, to go play around the golf. And Skip, even though he's on a golf cart, he's not walking 18 holes. But just the fact, Skip, I remember every coach that I've ever played for, on Friday, the last thing they would say, get off your feet. Skip, we're not playing till Sunday. And this is Friday at 1 o'clock. Get off your feet. Michael Jordan is on his feet the day of a game. That he's going to play later that night about 7-8 hours, and he's going to play probably 40 of the 48 minutes. And for him to go able to go out and to play at that elite of a level just goes to show you just how exceptionally talented he was, how much God-given ability he had. I don't know how he did it, but there have been a few guys. You hear stories about LT and how he was able to perform at the level he was. Skip, some guys just, God just gave them a, like, abundance of talent, and they could just do it. Little old Shannon, I wasn't one of those guys.
So, quick points of order. Obviously, Lawrence Taylor had some drug issues. And to my knowledge, Michael, even in 98, the year I was around, had no drug issues and no alcohol issues at that point. So you want to think like, had he become the Joe Namath snake stabler of the National Basketball Association?
No, it wasn't like that. No.
It was, he had such a raging fire inside him to compete. He was addicted to competing that he couldn't turn it off. After practice, he had to go straight to the golf course or he had to go straight to the card game. And he didn't want to just play until 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. He wanted to play until 5 a.m. And if you got him down, he'd want to play longer, as Magic said. And then he'd sleep for a couple hours. And Magic was also, he was actually describing what was going on in Barcelona before the Olympics. So then he'd go play golf and he'd take a quick nap. And he'd go score 30 against Ghana, somebody before halftime. But the point was, the point was that raging competitive fire ran so hot that I believe it did start to devour him. And I do believe that gambling issues, gambling associations, did have a lot to do with why he was forced to take a sabbatical for two heart of his prime years at age 30 and 31 and go play baseball, AA, for the Birmingham team that was owned by the Bulls owner, who's obviously also the White Sox owner, Jerry Reinsdorf. But I believe he was encouraged to step away because he'd gotten too deep into gambling. But the point was that fire in him. Remember, Magic also told the story in the documentary. They're playing cards the night before game one of the second finals of the first three-peat against Portland. Mm-hmm. And it's so late at night. And Magic said, hey, I got to go. I got to let you get some sleep here. And that's when Jordan told him, hey, I just want you to know I got him tomorrow night. And he was talking about Clyde Drexler. Well, poor Clyde Drexler hadn't trash-talked Michael Jordan at all. But once again, he was always creating, fictionalizing these bogus rivalries because he thought some people were saying Clyde Drexler was better than him. And you know what he did in the first half of game one? He made six threes and gives it this up and down the court looking at Magic like, I told you last night. I told you last night. So, again, the cigar smoking always bothered me when I was in Chicago because he was constantly smoking cigars. But it was the only way he knew to calm his rage was to smoke cigars off the floor. And again, do I think they're good for you? I do not. But Shannon, the other side of Michael was he was a supremely talented overachiever because the other thing he would do is Tim Grover, the great trainer of Michael Jordan, after every home game would go in the locker room and hold up fingers for Michael. Do you want to go at 6, 7, or 8? And he was talking about the Breakfast Club workout club that they had with Scottie Pippen and Ron Harper at Jordan's house before breakfast. And if Michael had played a so-so game, he might want to start at 6 a.m., maybe 7. Maybe if he played well, started at 8. But he never missed a workout when I was there in 98, his last go-round with those Bulls, because he was in supreme shape, even though he smoked cigars. So don't underestimate. He wasn't letting himself go. He was still working as hard as ever. And there was no drug or alcohol issue, certainly, that I was aware of.
Skip, one of the greatest athletes that I've ever been around was a guy named Simon Fletcher. He played with me in Denver my first 3 years. Simon would smoke probably 3 cigarettes, drink a fifth of Jack, and couldn't nobody beat him in wind sprints. He was an outside linebacker. He was the most, I'm talking about Skip, to what he could do after. I'm like, Fletch, how you do that? He's like, I don't know, I just do it. Skip, what Michael Jordan, Skip, when you say he had a competitive issue, see, B.J. Armstrong was describing it last night, Skip. He said, we played the game. Michael won the game. He said, he let us go out there and we do all this thing, and then when it came time to win, Michael says, okay, now it's my turn. Skip, Michael wanted your soul. The reason why, see, Skip, if he won all the money, the game was over. See, if he lost, he wanted to keep playing. Skip, he wanted your soul. He wanted, I got all your money. And on the court, he wanted to take your soul. Yes, we won the game, but I dropped 50. That was his mindset, Skip. He wanted to break you mentally. Well, Skip, if you take all the people, everybody money at the card table, the guys are looking around like, damn, man, the dude, I mean, he worth $150 million. He worth $200 million, and he just took $100,000 off me. Well, he's in the basketball game, Skip. He's like, dude, why are you playing so hard? Okay, you won. You got 30. You winning. Nope, I want 40. I want 50. That was his mindset. He's trying to not only break you mentally, he's trying to break you emotionally and physically, Skip. That was his, what he wanted to leave you in rape. He wanted to wreck shop. He wanted to be like Sherman going through Atlanta during the Civil War.
He did. Yep. And remember what Dennis Rodman said in last week's Last Dance episode about him? He said, I was great during games. My problem was, what do I do with myself after games? I believe in a very different way. That was Michael's problem. I can't turn off my competitive fire. I got to do this and I got to do that. I got to compete. And I got to gamble to make the stakes high enough to entertain myself and keep me alive off the court.
Yep. No mercy.
Yesterday on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Eli Manning predicted that Tom Brady might get off to a bumpy start in Tampa. Eli said, quote, I think it's going to be tough for him. Just the fact that he can't be doing everything he wants to be doing with the team and getting ready. And guys, according to Fox Bet, the Bucs win total for the year is currently set at 9.5 games. So, Shannon, does Eli have a point here about Brady?
He does. For the very first time, Skip, in 20 years, he's going to hear new verbiage. He's going to hear different calls. Now, everybody runs the same route. We just call them different things. But the verbiage, the terminology is going to be different. Now everything is going to be condensed. Skip, we all believe that the season's going to take place. But when does OTA start? When does minicamp start? So is everything's going to be condensed, going to be compressed. And so we all know Tom Brady is a stickler. He likes to rehearse. He likes to go over things. He likes to throw with his receivers. How soon, when would that happen? So if things get compressed, everything's get shortened, and then we go to the season, I can see what Eli's saying. Yes, he can get off to a bumpy start. He didn't say he's going to struggle all year, but he's saying, you know, considering that new terminology, a new place, new coaches, unfamiliar setting, and the condensed OTA mini camp or training camp, yes, I can see Tom getting off to a bumpy start. And so I do agree with Eli. Not to say that this is going to carry on throughout the course of the season, but it might be slow. It might be tough sledding because this is new for him. I would have less concerns if he was in New England, Skip, for the simple fact he knows that. He knows Edelman. He's thrown in N'Keal Harry. But this is a total different situation. And so I agree with Eli. Tom could be in for a bumpy ride to start the season.
So can I just get this out in the middle of our virtual table today?
Sure.
The Manning brothers do not like Tom Brady. The Manning brothers are resentful and jealous of Tom Brady, dare I say, because the older brother, Peyton, the other day on Denver radio, we talked about it here on Undisputed, made a sarcastic remark about after Tampa had signed Rob Gronkowski, oh, now they're going to win the Super Bowl for sure. Okay. You don't have to hate.
Oh, my goodness.
You could just sort of deflect, avoid, you maybe not answer the question. You don't have to take a sarcastic shot at Tom in Tampa. And now Eli, who never says anything about anybody, you know, for Eli, this is like hellfire and damnation to say it's going to be a bumpy ride for Tom Brady. He's never criticized anybody in his life.
But again, this is what I don't understand. Skip, what I don't understand with you is that when people take shots at LeBron, you love it. You standing on the table. Did you hear what David Blatt said? Did you hear what Charles Barkley said? Did you hear what this was saying? The moment somebody offers an honest assessment about Tom Brady, they're hating. Eli owned Tom Brady. He kept the man from getting the bowl. Why Eli want to hate?
Eli lucked up twice against Tom Brady. Tom should have won both those games.
No.
Yes, he did. Eli got away with completing the luckiest pass in the history of the Super Bowl, a pass and a prayer in which he basically put his hand over his eyes and threw it as far as he could into the dangerous middle of the field. And David Tyree, like the sixth receiver on his roster, caught it in his face mask over Rodney Harrison. I've never seen anything like it before, and yet Belichick's defense once again spit the bit under pressure. 2 minutes left in the game, they allowed the game-winning touchdown. Okay, so here's what's happening. Peyton Manning is now 44 years of age, about a year older than Tom is, and he'll play at 43. And I think Peyton, you know, Peyton, like a lot of ex-players, is looking at Brady shattering the mold, playing at 43 for a really good team that has a chance to win next year. And that mold shattered Peyton because when it was time to stop, he finally just had to stop. It was historically predictive of when he was going to have to stop, and he did. And Eli now is 39 years of age, and it looks like the game might just have passed him by, and he might have played his last NFL down at age 39. And they're looking at Tom at 43, surrounded by two Pro Bowl receivers and two very good tight ends on top of another tight end he just added. And this is my problem with what Eli said yesterday. He did not bring up Rob Gronkowski. Neither did you. All of a sudden, Tom's got his security blanket. The receiver he has trusted the most under fire, big game pressure situations, is not Edelman, it's Gronkowski. We saw what happened in the last Super Bowl that Tom won two Super Bowls ago. The big passes were caught by Gronk to start and finish that game-winning drive in the middle of the fourth quarter of a tie game. And Rob Gronkowski is now a buck. So if you miss OTAs and you miss most of training camp, he's got one guy who knows him and fits him like two gloves, and it's Gronk. And Gronk will be there for him in the first couple of games, so I think that will get him over the hump. I don't think it will be as bumpy a ride as you think because of that guy and those two Pro Bowl receivers who are both, especially Mike Evans, they're just go up and get the ball kind of receivers, especially Evans. When in doubt, I believe Tom could just throw him some jump balls and it will work. This team is loaded on offense and I think on defense as well. It has the fifth best odds on FoxBet to win the Super Bowl. And for a while, it was the fourth best odds, just above New Orleans. Now it's just a tick below New Orleans at 13-1 versus 12-1. So it's all good. And I don't know why Peyton and Eli can't just say, way to go, Tom. Congratulations. Good luck to you. But you got a sweet situation down there, and it should be a lot of fun. That's what they should say.
No, they shouldn't, Skip. They should offer an honest assessment of what they believe is going to transpire. Skip, we got to get out of this notion. Anybody that says something that's not praises, that's not bouquet of roses at Tom, is not hating. And you can study all the film you want, Skip. If that was the case, if you didn't need to practice, why does people practice then? Why not just study, study the tape, go in the meeting room, just study, and go home, I'll see you on Sunday. Of course, you practice. There's a reason why people install practice, Skip. That's all Eli said. No one can say anything about Tom Brady without hating. Skip, all I know is Eli said, I got two Super Bowls. I will go to the Hall of Fame thanks to Tom Brady. That's what Eli can say. I'm going to be in Canton. Thank you, Tom. Why would I want to hate? Peyton Manning, the last three times they faced in meaningful ball games, Peyton won. You remember, Skip? The Super Bowl, the AFC Championship game in 06, they met again in 15, and they met in 12, in 13. So the last three meaningful games they played, Peyton won. So let's not get it twisted, Skip. Everybody is not jealous of Tom Brady. You think Romo is jealous? He has to offer an honest assessment. Nobody says Romo is jealous, Skip. No, you got to stop this. But as long as they take shots at LeBron James, ain't nobody jealous. They offer their honest assessment. They play, and, you know, Charles is just so honest, and this one, and yada, yada, yada. David Blatt, he's the winningest international coach in the really? Really? That's like saying somebody, he's the best American football player out of Germany. Who? What? You got to do it here, Skip Bayless. You got to do it in the big leagues. So, in other words, Eli isn't saying, Skip, he didn't say Tom Brady going to stink up the joint. He says it might be bumpy in the beginning because everything's going to get condensed. Tom Brady doesn't know these teammates. And like you said, Tom Brady is not just used to throwing the ball up. Romo could do that. Romo could probably just come in because he threw the ball up to Dez and Dez would jump up and catch it. Okay, that's his game. That's not Tom Brady's game. Tom Brady's everything is on timing, is on repetition. You be where you're supposed to be. Well, he's going to have to retrain himself because sometimes he's just going to put it up and Mike Evans is going to jump up and catch it. So you need to get that routine down. That's all Eli's saying, Skip. We got to stop this notion that anytime somebody critiques Tom and it's not, oh, he's the greatest ever, it's hate.
We have had a parade of ex-players on Undisputed just spew Brady hate, and it comes from a position of jealousy and resentment that he's still going strong and has a chance to go win another Super Bowl at age 43 when all of the rest of you were forced to stop prematurely before you really wanted to. Your body gave out or your heart and mind gave out. You just couldn't stomach the grind anymore. And Tom Brady is on fire to play in Tampa. And he's talking about playing for five more years in Tampa.
He can play 10. Let me ask you a question, Skip, if you don't mind me asking. Of the all-time historically great players, which one is played as well as LeBron in year 17 as LeBron is playing right now? Any of the historically great players, from Kareem to Will all the way back down, name the one that's playing as great as LeBron. Oh, that's right. Charles Barkley did play 17 years.
We're talking about Tom Brady, the GOAT. We're not talking about the phony GOAT.
You see what you did?
We can't let him leak into this conversation. He just contaminated a GOAT conversation.
Oh, no. You see what you did? See, LeBron James is in year 17, having a historically great season. When people critique him that didn't even make it to year 17, let alone play great in year 17, they didn't play as well as LeBron played in year 14, 15, 16, didn't even make it to 17. They're not jealous. They're just offering their honest opinion. Eli Manning offered an assessment of what he thinks is going to happen, considering that Tom Brady's heard one terminology for 20 years, have had a set of rules in how he do things one way for 20 years. He says, I think it's going to be a little bumpy. Things are going to be condensed. New teammate. Oh, he hating. Whoa, man, he hating on Tom Brady. Stop this, Skip. You perpetuate this bull jive, thinking that anytime someone critiques Tom Brady or critique his play or what they think the assessment of the team's going to be is hate. It is not. People can sometimes tell the truth and it not be hate, okay? But if telling the truth is hate,
I'm a hating mofo. A lot of players in the NBA have played longer than 17 years. So let's keep that in perspective. Nobody has played to age 43 at a high level in the National Football League, the high contact game that is pro football. So let's separate the phony GOAT from the GOAT.
Skip, the only guy that you can say that was close to maybe what LeBron is doing is probably Kobe. Probably Kobe, because Kobe played 20 years, and I think year 17, maybe year 18, he was the one he tore his Achilles, if I'm not mistaken, Skip. So stop. So all these other guys that's offered these assessments, they jealous. They jealous old GOAT James, because he's still going strong. And guess what? He's out back for year 18, too, coming off the title. We're going to win that title. They can push the season. They can play these last games in June, July. It doesn't matter. We're going to win that title. No mercy.
While the GOAT debate between MJ and LeBron rages on everywhere and every day, Kendrick Perkins said that off the court there is no debate, and LeBron is the greatest of all time in that department. Shannon, you've mentioned this before, but do you agree with your guy Perk?
Yeah, Skip, when we're talking about basketball players, I'm assuming now, and I'll go broader in a second. But, Skip, when you look at what LeBron has done in his communities, the I Promise School, his ability to speak out on issues that normally athletes wouldn't touch, especially, we just stick with the NBA, the Trayvon Martin. It was he that started wearing the hoodies. Skip, think about this. Trayvon Martin probably lost his life because he had a hoodie, and all the NBA uniforms now have hoodies. Let that sink in for just a second. So he spoke out on that. We've seen him speak out on other issues. We see his stump for Hillary Clinton. I mean, people might, take Tom Brady. Tom Brady had a Make America Great hat and tried to say, oh, that thing's just a prop. He wanted to deny it. Almost like Peter did Jesus. When Jesus told him, you're going to deny me three times before the cocks crow. He's like, I would never do that, Jesus. And sure and behold, when they came, I don't know that man. Tom Brady, oh, that's just a prop. That ain't nothing. LeBron James like, I'm on stage. We need to put this woman in office. So Skip, he's taking chances that other athletes before him would never take it. Because that brand, as Michael famously said, the other party buys sneakers also. So for him to take the stand and I think because he's done it, we've seen other guys do it. We've seen other athletes in basketball and in other professional sports take opportunities to say their political affiliation or take, tweet out where we see injustices. And going on in our community, we'll see guys tweet that and say, what a miscarriage of justice. Whereas before, Skip, guys wouldn't say a thing on that. For me, Skip, it's just hard for me to put someone ahead of Muhammad Ali, ahead of Jackie Robinson, given the times, because you have to realize when Jackie did what he did, I think it was in 47, Skip, and Ali did what he did in the 60s, Skip. In the 60s was the height of the civil rights. It didn't get any more combustible than that. And the man says, I'm not going to kill someone that's done nothing to me, when it's the people right here that's turning their dogs, putting their water holes, denying me and others that look like me equal rights, civil rights. Like, I'm not doing that. For what? And you know what? Do what you want to do. You want these belts? Take them. You want to take my career? Take it. But I'm not going. Still. And Jackie and Mr. Robinson having to come up, Skip, when they were the insults that he had to go through, and people would say things and spit on him and do certain things towards him. It's hard for me to put LeBron in front of them, but I think those guys made it easier for LeBron because he says it's always the right time to say and do the right thing. And I think it's made it easier for LeBron. But if we're talking about basketball players, it's hard for me to say someone is bigger than LeBron. Now, Kareem, Skip, you have to realize, Kareem was at the summit in Cleveland, Skip, as a college player. People don't realize, Kareem was there.
He was.
With Ali, with Jim Brown, with some of the all-time greats. He was there. So, but Skip, I don't think he's been as outspoken on certain issues. Now, behind the scenes, we know what he converted to the Muslim faith. But LeBron James, Skip, it's not even close. It's not even close. And I think that's the vast difference between he and Mike.
Okay, this is deep and complex, but
it is.
Allow me to make the point, and I think you would agree, every opportunity I've had on this show, as critical as I've been of LeBron on the court, I have applauded him mm-hmm. off the court for the many
Absolutely.
Powerful stances he has taken against racial injustice and mm-hmm. social injustice. And the I Promise School is legendary to me, what he has done off the court. All of that
right.
is correct. But when our man Kendrick Perkins goes to the point of it's not even a debate that LeBron is the GOAT off the court, man, Perk, be careful there because Shannon makes strong, great points. You're eliminating a lot of history. And one name you didn't invoke that I want to throw into the mix here, Shannon, the great Bill Russell was also at that summit
right.
backing Ali that
Correct.
Day in Cleveland.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mm-hmm. just remember, Bill Russell was the first black superstar in the NBA, and he was breaking through in a city of Boston that did have a racist component to it. Let me just go that far. And then Bill Russell became the first black. He did. Bill Russell, first black head coach, because he was obviously the player coach for 3 years of the Celtics. So he was even
yep.
that. And finally, he was a powerful member and force in the Black Power movement, who was constantly mm-hmm. outspoken against racism to the all-white media in Boston. Well, that's mm-hmm. that's breakthrough, man. That is, you are threatening your very career, which brings us back to
right.
Kareem. He didn't have a loud voice, but he had a strong voice. He didn't
Correct.
Scream it, but he said it softly and he said it powerfully. Mm-hmm. And he even went so far as to say about Michael Jordan, and I've never defended Jordan off the court, but he said of Michael Jordan, he chose commerce over conscience. Well, that's mm-hmm. a deep, powerful way to say what the truth was.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then we get to Muhammad Ali, and just allow me to come on top of what you said, just to amplify a little bit what you said, because Ali was my all-time favorite athlete. And I was growing up in the 60s while he was taking charge in the 60s. And he joins the Nation of Islam because he did not want to carry on with what he called his slave name, Cassius
slave.
Clay.
Correct.
And then mm-hmm. he chose not to join the military and risk his career. And to your point, LeBron's never actually risked his whole career to take a stand
right.
the way Ali did.
Right.
And he said, I got no quarrel with them Viet Cong, and he didn't. And so he said,
right.
I believe in my faith so deeply, I don't want to go fight in Vietnam. I don't believe in
right.
it. and an all-white jury convicted him of draft dodging, and he didn't go to jail, right. but he went into exile. And what did he do, right. Shannon? For 3 years of his prime, he could not box. He lost three prime right. years of earning power and legacy building, mm-hmm. and he went on yes. tours of America speaking at colleges against the Vietnam War when it was not fashionable to speak right. out against it, and no. to campaign against racism in America. It was yes. powerful. It was not fashionable. He didn't have Twitter or Instagram. He didn't have anybody else on his side from the black community doing nope. exactly what he was in athletics. I mean, he had Dr. King
right.
until he was assassinated, right. obviously. But the point was
right.
Ali was breaking ground and losing. He lost his career for three long years and then came back with a fury. And it was sensational to watch. But yeah, you're right. Even Colin Kaepernick, if I can bring it up to contemporary times, Colin mm-hmm. risked his career and he lost yes. it to take a stand.
Right.
So as many great things as LeBron has done, he hasn't gone to the point of having to risk not having basketball anymore. And I'm not trying to diminish any way, shape, or form what LeBron has done, but man, that's right. that's powerful when you're going to risk everything right. to take a stand. Right. That's when you, right. you put your money where your mouth is. And those people
yeah,
did.
Skip, because, yeah, and Skip, you have to understand that when he did what he did, Muhammad Ali was very unpopular. He was even unpopular in the black community because there were other black men that had to right. sign up for the draft and they had to go fight.
Fight.
So
yeah.
he was not popular.
Agreed.
Even like Dr. King, it's funny, Skip. How it comes. Skip, I think the thing for me, I think it really changed for Muhammad Ali, and he had done great. When people saw him light the torch in Atlanta in 1996, he was no longer the guy that was quick-witted, Skip, and had all those, could get into the verbal jarring matches and have everybody laugh, make everybody laugh. They looked at him and said, what this man endured, he's lighting a torch. That's what this is about. Now, all of a sudden, he became a sympathetic figure because at the time, he was castigated. Nobody was talking about Muhammad Ali in the term. Nobody thought. I guarantee you, Muhammad Ali probably, if you probably ask his wife, Lonnie, did Muhammad think he would be what he became later in life? It would be very interesting to hear us yep. say, what when he was doing what he was doing, did he think he would become this beloved figure? I can assure you, Dr. King had no idea he was going to become beloved, because Skip, everybody, even people that were against him, quote him now. It's the same thing with Ali. Mm. Skip, LeBron has been unbelievable. I don't know if we've seen an athlete this big, obviously, Skip, because now you have all these media platforms. So, you know, Arthur Ashe, Skip, we forgot about Arthur Ashe. We forgot about him and what he went Good through. One. But Skip, yep. LeBron James, as far as basketball, and now in today's time, yeah, Skip, it's hard for me to see someone bigger than he is and taking a more outspoken stance.
I got it. Can I please add one more name to the list? I don't know if people yes. remember Craig Hodges. I know you do, Shannon, because he played with Michael Jordan on his first two championship teams. And
yes.
3 years ago, Craig Hodges wrote a book called The Triumphs and Struggles of an NBA Freedom Fighter. In 91, mm-hmm. before Michael played in his first finals against Magic, because of the Rodney King beating here in the LA area at the hands of four white police officers, Craig mm-hmm. Hodges encouraged Michael and Magic to boycott game one of the finals, take a stand for the black community and racial injustice, social injustice. And he says in the book that Michael just flat out told him that's crazy, and that Magic told him that's just too extreme. And Craig said his response was, what's happening to the black community right now is very extreme. And because of Correct. His outspoken stances against Michael and the league, after another year and one more championship, he basically got, as you call it, whiteballed from the league, and his career was over at age 32. And remember, he's one of the greatest three-point shooters ever. He won three straight three-point contests at All-Star Weekend. So there's another name of a guy who risked his career to try to make a statement. He wasn't a star, but he risked it all.
And remember, Skip, he said that he actually tried to give, if I'm not mistaken, I forget who the president was at the time. It might have been 91, 92.
Bush.
So it might have been.
First Bush.
Bush.
Yes.
Bush. First, the dad.
The first.
And he tried to, because remember, everybody said, well, instead of just being so outspoken, why don't you go sit down with the president and try to talk to him? He said, I did that. He said, I tried to take him. But Skip, I didn't go, but they tell you what you can and can't do. You are not to pass anything. You are not to have any isolated conversation. So they nip all that in the bud. So this notion, well, take something and talk to the president, that's not happening. It's a photo op. That's what you're going there for. Take the picture, get up out of there. Because normally, Skip, they got like five or six other groups that's coming in to take photo ops also. So they're not, it's great.
Right.
But I agree, Craig Hodges, and he has some very outspoken things to say about Mike.
Yeah, and remember, when he went to the White House after the first championship, he wore a dashiki to make that statement.
He did.
Whew, powerful discussion, guys. Good stuff all around from both of you.
No mercy.
So a list of the top sneakers in NBA history was released, and many iconic shoes made the list, but it was the Air Jordans who stole the show. At number two were the classic Air Jordan 1s. The best-ranked sneakers of all time were the Air Jordan 11s. And let me just say before I ask my question, both of you guys take your shoe game very seriously. Shannon, I've seen you post videos of your crazy shoe closet. So, Shannon,
yes.
I'll ask you first. Do you agree with this list?
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised that Jordan tops the list, Skip, because Jordan made shoes fashionable. Before Jordan, Skip, basically you practice and play basketball in gym shoes, with the exception of the Chuck Taylors. Now, the Chuck Taylor, Skip, people used to wear starched jeans and button-down shirts, and that was the style. But Michael Jordan, that was the style. Michael Jordan made shoes fashionable. Now, the shoes, Skip, everybody knows about these are the Air Jordan 1s. Now, these are the frags. They're not the black and white colorway that first, but these are what they call the OGs. These were the first shoes that Michael Jordan wore. Now, he had two colorways, red, white, black, and he had red and black. Those were the ones that every time he wore, he got fined $5,000. Instead of stop wearing them, Nike paid the fine. But the shoe that everybody is talking about is what we call this would be a Jordan 11. This is the Concord, Skip. And what made this shoe so popular, it was the first shoe to have patent leather. Prior to that, you only saw patent leather on shoes. You were going to the prom or you were going to say your Easter speech. That was the only time, not on a gym shoe, Skip. And when the Concord came out, everybody lost their mind. But then something happened in March of 1996. It's in the screen. This is also the 11th, Skip. It's called the Bread. Michael Jordan wore this shoe exclusively in the playoffs. And it never changed. And the game was over. Once this shoe came, it's still the most popular shoe, Skip. And everything they do, now they've come out with the all gray, which is called the cool gray. They have the Space Jam in the 11. They have so many different, so many different ones, Skip, and they do so many different colorways. So I'm not surprised that the 11 and the 1 dominated. Skip, you know, you can't see it, Skip, but you know the shoe that he won the 88 dunk contest in, the cement, were the whites. So I'm not surprised. I thought it would be the OG, Skip, because that's where it originally started. But I'm not surprised that the 11 is the most popular shoe.
Yeah.
Because the 11 is unbelievable shoe. It's great comfort. And it's a banging shoe. The patent leather is what set it aside from all other shoes, Skip, because the 11, Skip, is all patent leather. Be it cool gray, be it the Concords, be it the Space Jam, it didn't matter. It was patent leather. And that's what set it aside from all other shoes.
Gotcha. So when I saw this list, before I opened it, I tried to guess what's number one, and I'm with you. I thought one would be the one, would be the ones, would be the original, right. The OGs. It just got to be the shoes, money, right? It just got to be that one.
Right.
And yet, when I saw it was the 11, I thought about it, And the more I thought about it, the more I liked it.
Yeah.
Because the truth was, if you look hard at Jordan's legacy, he had his greatest year in that shoe. That year, they went 72-10. That year, he won the regular season MVP. He won the All-Star Game MVP in San Antonio. He won the Finals MVP as they beat Gary Payton's Sonics in six games. Mm-hmm. He won the scoring title again, one of 10 times. And he was first team all defense. And on top of that, it's the Space Jam sneaker. So I don't know. Just on, you know, on pure legacy, you just say the impact of what happened in that shoe. Whew. Yeah, okay, I'm good with that being number one. And by the way, the Concords were always my favorite. And the reason, Shannon, you brought it up, the patent leather, I always called them my tuxedo sneakers because those are the ones that they're my favorites to wear on Undisputed, low tops or high tops, because you can they can dress you up. You can wear it with a suit, and it just looks like they're made for a suit. So you can go casual or you can go formal. And they work. Mm-hmm. And it was the first sneaker I said, that works. However you want to use it, it works.
Yes.
So I love the choice. I second the emotion of the choice. But Shannon, two quick points. Also, before I open up the list, I hoped two classic sneakers at least made it into the top 10, and boom, boom, they did. First, at number 9 was the old Adidas Superstar from the 80s. And Shannon, again, for me in the 80s, I just lived in the Superstar. That's all I ever wore to play in or to walk around in, or it was it. And remember, Run DMC ran to the bank in those
shell
Superstars.
It, yeah, they had a shell toe Adidas.
And remember, I got it. And remember, what did Jordan? What was Michael Jordan's choice when he came to the NBA in 84? He wanted to be Adidas, right?
Adidas.
That's what we learned in the documentary. And his mom said, no, you need to take a trip to Port, to Oregon, to the Nike headquarters, and at least listen to what those people have to say. And then when his father heard what those people had to say, his father said, you need to do this. And Michael said, okay. And it was simply the greatest decision he ever made in his life, right? I mean you can't do any better than that. You used it. Go ahead.
And this is why, Skip, this is why nobody will ever can top him with the sneaker game because he was the first to do it, and he's kind of cornered the market. If you take all the guys, think about it, Skip, normally when guys have shoe deals, once they retire, they discontinue making the shoe. Michael Jordan's shoe is more popular now than when he played, and he hadn't played in 15 years. So when you look at it, Skip, And I remember, you know, I remember all the shoes from the threes. I like the cement, Skip. As a matter of fact, these Concords and these Breads, Skip, these are the original shoes. So 1996 and 1995, these are the original shoes.
Yeah.
So, like you said, when they came out with patent leather, I'm like, who thought of, at first, Skip, I'm thinking, who the hell thought about putting patent leather on a gym shoe?
Nobody.
And then when you saw, and when I actually, Skip, when I actually went to the store and saw it, I said, oh my goodness. I said, and then they just started. So they went from the Concord to the Breads, and they went to the Cool Grays, and they went to the Space Jam with two different bottles of the Imperial. I said, oh man, Skip, nobody's gonna be able to touch it. Kobe has a great shoe. Okay. I love Kobe shoes. As a matter of fact, Skip, my last year in Denver, I went to a game to see Kobe play. The shoes Kobe played in, I went back, I went in the dressing room, talked to him. I said, bro, let me get those. Skip, he took them off his feet, he autographed them for me, and he gave them to me, the Huaraches. Now, people don't remember, Skip, originally out of high school, he signed with Adidas. I think it was like his sixth or seventh year in the league before he came aboard Nike, which was a great decision. Skip, if you also remember, Michael Jordan in college, Dean Smith was a Cons guy, Converse. That's what he wore in college. But they were not going to make him bigger than Magic and Larry.
Okay, that brings me to Converse and the second shoe that made it into the top 10, because to your point, at the time Michael came into the league, 84, Michael and Larry dominated the shoe game with those
Magic.
Converse weapons.
Magic,
remember those?
Yes.
I mean Magic,
yes.
I'm sorry, Magic and Larry dominated,
yes,
with those weapons, the Converse weapons. Everybody was wearing those at that,
yeah,
point. But the shoe,
yeah,
I want to talk about that you mentioned was the shoe I literally grew up playing in, was the Chuck Taylor Converse All-Star. Now, in
yeah,
my day, they were always all white. And quick
white
story, when I was a freshman in high school for the freshman team, everybody wore all white Converse, and we loved the black ones. And if you could get your hands on black ones, you were it at that point. And I went to the varsity basketball coach, who was a legend, named Don Van Poole. I went into his office before school one day on behalf of the freshman team, and I asked Coach Van Poole, could we wear black Chuck Taylors? And I got a one-word answer, no. And so that was the end of that deal. But I've always loved the black ones. Now everybody loves red ones and green ones and yellow ones. And
yep,
they have endured, and they're selling just as well now as fashion,
right,
footwear as they did back in,
right,
the day as just purely basketball footwear. So way to go, and Converse All-Stars were number 5 on the list.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I got to keep these things on too. These are the old GOAT James 15s, the floors you can't see them, Skip. Nice shoe. Real, real, real nice shoe. But Skip, if you really look at, Skip, go ahead.
Wait, time out. I need to make one quick note here that ESPN also did a bottom 10 of all time. And I was a little surprised. Guess what was number 8 on that list in the bottom 10? The LeBron 13s?
What?
So one of LeBron's shoes made the bottom 10? That's shameful.
What was it, the Soldier?
I don't know which one it was. I don't follow LeBron's shoes. I don't know LeBron's shoes. I didn't even know he had a lot. Does he have his own signature shoe? I don't even know.
He got 17. As a matter of fact, I'm wearing the Monstars right now. Skip, if you really look at it, if you look at probably 10 of the most iconic shoes, really, Jordan, probably, you could easily put Jordan, say Jordan has them all. Because if you look at the threes, which are the cements, he won the dunk contest, Skip, in the white cements.
Okay.
The fours are very good. People don't really like the fours, Skip, because they crease so much.
Mm-hmm.
They're easily creased.
Yeah.
I like the fives. People like the infrared, which are the sixes. The sevens, I don't really like the eights, but the 11s. But Skip, I mean, when you look at what he's got, Skip, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yeah, those are the black cements that he actually played in the game. But he won the dunk contest. Those are the twos. Now, Skip, me, I'm biased towards the twos. My mama waited in line in 1987 for 3 hours to spend $100 on those shoes. Those are my favorite because the memory, what it brings back, and what my mom, you know, waiting in line to get me those shoes,
yeah,
and saying, boy, you better keep these shoes for 100 years because I ain't never waiting in line again, and I'm never paying another $100 for a pair of gym shoes. That's what people... My mom called him Skip. My grandma called him gym shoes also. But, he changed the game, Skip. That's why nobody's ever going to catch him,
yep,
Skip. Because you can't talk Michael Jordan without talking shoes.
Yeah, so you are willing to admit, live national TV, that Michael Jordan is at least the sneaker goat?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we on Mount Rushmore. I think we on Mount Rushmore. It's Jordan, it's Kobe, it's Ron, and it's the Dr. J All-Stars. I'm gonna go old school. I ain't gonna pick the weapons with Bird and Magic.
No. Sorry.
I'm not gonna forget this day. It's been said by Shannon. MJ is the sneaker goat. Just so you know, it's been said. I'm not going to forget. Skip and I are going to remember that one. You guys know your shoes. You put me to shame there. That was really interesting. No mercy.